major earthquake and tsunami hit Japan.
We'll hear about the impact from our reporters around the world.
Marketplace Midday Update is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for downloading our podcast from Marketplace.org. It's Friday, March 11th.
Coming up, we'll speak with our reporters in Asia and in Hawaii. We'll also hear about some other news, the new iPad 2, which debuts today.
Those stories and more coming right up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
Well, this is a day that's going to go down in the history books after one of the worst earthquakes of the last century hit Japan. It was a magnitude 8.9. It triggered a tsunami, which was devastating in the city of Sendai, which is a couple of hundred kilometers north of Tokyo.
Let's start with an overview from our Asia correspondent, Rob Schmitz. Rob, what can you tell us?
Well, many people are still missing, and a ship with 100 people aboard was swept away by the tsunami. Japanese air carriers have canceled hundreds of flights in and out of the country, so that means 35,000 passengers are stuck. Officials have shut down Narita, Japan's largest airport, and as far as damage goes, there are reports that at least 80 fires have been triggered by the quake and tsunami. One big one at an oil refinery north of Tokyo has been burning for hours.
And Rob, I saw that a state of emergency was declared at a nuclear power plant in Japan, although no radiation leaks are being detected so far. How is the country's infrastructure holding up?
Well, Japan has built its infrastructure with earthquakes in mind, so the hidden story here might be how bad it could have been. But this was simply an historic earthquake. You mentioned the nuclear plants. I mean, the government has shut down four nuclear power plants in the area hit by the quake. Authorities have issued emergencies at two of them, and one of those plants was on fire, and residents have been told to stay indoors in case of a radiation leak. Hmm. The other thing to keep in mind is the economic impact of shutting these plants down. Japan's economy really depends on nuclear energy. It makes up a third of the country's power supply. I spoke with economist David Cohen about this today.
That could be a risk of putting out of commission, you know, some of their power generating capacity. That could hamper the rest of economic activity.
But at this stage, the economy is secondary to the human toll that we still don't even know.
Marketplace's Rob Schmitz in Shanghai. Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Let's go back to Japan now and get a firsthand account of what happened there and how it's affecting the Japanese economy. John Brinsley is a reporter for Bloomberg News in Tokyo, and he's with us right now. Hi, John.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you guys doing over there, and what was it like?
Well, it was pretty scary. This was clearly the strongest one I've ever been in. We are up on the 21st, 22nd floor in downtown Tokyo. It was shaking for a good 10 minutes, very, very strongly.
10 minutes?
I think so, but that may have just been how long my heart was moving. It was 7 hours ago when the earthquake hit, and there have been aftershocks as recently as 5 or 10 minutes ago.
Wow. You know, how are businesses and Japanese companies reacting to all of this, John?
Tokyo accounts for more than 10% of all of Japan's gross domestic product. It's the epicenter of the financial and government world. To give you an idea of how busy it is, there are something like 6 million passengers that go through Tokyo's trains every day. Those trains have been stopped for the last 7 hours. The government has said that they're considering asking the United States military for help. There are nuclear power plants in the prefecture of Fukushima that have been shut down, and the government just announced that one of them is having trouble with its cooling system, and they've ordered an evacuation in part of the area.
So the economy is just ground to a halt.
Well, the economy hasn't ground to a halt. I mean, the yen actually strengthened on some speculation that Japanese companies would have to repatriate their large foreign currency reserves back to Japan to help with construction. But this is going to be a major rebuilding effort on the part of the Japanese government.
I want to talk about that because Japan is in a whole lot of debt. How's the government going to be able to respond to this?
As you say, Japan's debt is somewhere around 200% of their GDP. Now, the reason that the government bond situation here does not resemble that in, say, Greece or Portugal or Spain is that more than 90% of all Japanese government bonds are held by domestic investors. So as long as domestic investors feel that the Japanese government will eventually be able to pay them back, the risk of the kind of contagion that we've seen in Europe is so far anyway seems to be rather small. But I really do feel right now anyway, given the nature, which of course is still ongoing, of the tragedy we have, it's pretty devastating.
John Brinsley, Asia government editor for Bloomberg. John, thanks.
Thank you.
President Obama this morning released a statement saying in part that the U.S. stands ready to help the Japanese people in this time of great trial. Phone lines to aid groups like the Red Cross are already ringing. But what will Japan need exactly? Marketplace's Gregory Warner has that.
Nan Bizard is Senior Director of International Response and Programs for the American Red Cross. She says these first hours since she got the call about Japan are different than when she was alerted last year to the earthquake in Haiti.
I say that cautiously because we don't know the full extent of the damage, but when we responded to Haiti, we knew that there weren't tarps and tents available in the market, and we knew that hundreds of thousands, if not more, would need emergency shelters.
11 Japanese Red Cross divisions have already been mobilized, and at the American Red Cross, the phones are ringing with calls from volunteers.
Earthquakes in particular, and sometimes the tsunamis that they can create, are extremely dramatic. And people want to know what's happening and how they might be able to help.
International search and rescue teams are on standby. The U.S. Navy says its ships were unaffected by the tsunami, but were ready to provide disaster relief if needed. I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Friday, the 11th day of March. I'm Steve Chiatakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. Now more on the earthquake and tsunami in Japan.
Hawaii was under tsunami threat this morning. Marketplace's Adrian Hill joined us from Honolulu just after the first waves hit.
Well, outside, it doesn't look that bad or that unusual. I did see the footage on the television. The local TV channel had a shot of sort of a massive pullback, and they were showing exposed coral reefs. So I'd say that right now we're really at sort of a wait-and-see moment.
A pullback indicating that maybe a bigger wave is to come.
That maybe a bigger wave is going to come, yes. But again, we haven't seen that here, and it sounds like at Kauai they did not. So Kauai is the island right next door. They didn't see a huge wave when they expected it. So I'd say we're holding our breaths, crossing our fingers, and waiting and see what happens.
Kauai, of course, was the first island expected to be hit. It's the middle of the night there, Adrian, but Honolulu is a big tourism destination. Are people really paying attention to all this?
Oh, yeah. Everyone's awake, I think. Everyone's got the local news on. Out on the balcony where we have a view of what's happening outside, you know, we can see everybody else is on their balcony, too, watching, sort of taking pictures, trying to figure out what's going on, and probably feeling really glad to be up high instead of down lower to the ground.
And to be sure, you're in a safe place, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm on the 17th floor, so well out of the way, they promised me.
Very good. All right. Marketplace's Adrian Hill in Honolulu. Adrian, thanks. Keep us posted.
I will. Thank you.
Now for some context from someone who covered Japan for a very long time. The BBC's Duncan Bartlett is the former Tokyo bureau chief, and he joins us now from London. Good morning, Duncan.
Good morning.
What communication have you had with Japan so far today?
Well, I've been talking to people in Tokyo via email, and I can tell you that a lot of people are still trapped in their offices. They're unable to go home because there are no trains or commuter services running, and the only thing that they're able to do is to watch the television reports on their mobile phones. Now, of course, the situation in Tokyo is a lot better than it is in the northeast of Japan, where those television pictures are coming from.
What kind of preparations can be done or have been taking place in Japan? Because they've been expecting a big earthquake, right, for a long time.
Almost the first thing children learn at school in Japan is how to respond to a major earthquake. And those drills have become even more common in the wake of the earthquake in New Zealand a few weeks ago. But nobody expected, of course, something on this scale. Having said that, of course, the emergency services have prepared for a big earthquake in Japan for a long time, and they are now carrying out the procedures which they've rehearsed for many, many times.
Is Japan equipped to handle an earthquake this large?
This is the largest earthquake that Japan has ever experienced. So this will be a test as to whether it is equipped. But nothing really could prepare the city of Sendai for something on this scale. There was nothing that anybody could do to prepare for that, Steve.
The BBC's Duncan Bartlett joining us from London. Duncan, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Now let's get some news on the economic impact of all of this from Ben Richardson. He's the BBC's reporter in Singapore. Hi, Ben.
Hello, Jeremy.
So tell us what's going on with the companies that have been affected by this earthquake and tsunami in Japan.
Well, it's still very early, but a lot of them are taking measures. We spoke to Toyota, which is the world's biggest car maker. Now, they said that they've put together a task force that is looking at the situation at their various plants. They're evacuating employees from various plants. They're also checking in with their suppliers. And we spoke to Sony, the electronics maker.
Right.
And they've got six factories in the Northeast, which make semiconductors. They're also checking out what it is at the moment. They say that they produce lasers there, and all the employees have been safely evacuated. And we spoke to a Singaporean shipping company, which ships into, not into the main port in the north, but onto Yokohama, the biggest, one of the biggest ports in Japan. And they said that there's been a loss of power there at their terminal. And obviously ships are backing up out at sea. So this is going to have an impact there as well. It's going to take longer for them to get their goods in and offloaded.
And obviously the main focus right now is the human impact of this disaster, but there's an economic impact as well. Tell us about the economic effects that are going on right now across Asia.
Yeah, I mean, markets are what they are. While the rest of us are sort of watching slack-jawed at what's happening, markets are reacting. And there was a very quick sell-off in the yen and the stock markets out of Japan. The futures for the Japanese market at the moment are down, or have been as low as about 5% off. So it does look as if the stock markets across the globe are going to be affected by this. People are very worried, really, about the economic situation within Japan. The economy was had slowed and had contracted by more than many people expected. And though things were looking up in the second half of this year, the real question is how Japan is going to manage to rebuild, especially when it's got one of the highest debt levels in the industrialized world.
The BBC's Ben Richardson in Singapore. Thanks, Ben.
Cheers. Thank you very much.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Friday, March 11th. I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson on Twitter at Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm on Twitter at Radio Chio. You can give us your feedback by checking out our website, marketplace.org, and click on the link that says Contact.
Now to an important piece of financial news going on in Washington. The Securities and Exchange Commission and other regulators are waiting to hear if their budgets will be cut. This is just as they're trying to comply with the new financial reform law. Marketplace's Economy 4.0 project is looking at the ways the financial system can better serve more people going forward. And our special correspondent, David Brancaccio, joins us now from New York. Hi, David.
Hello there.
So what's the status of the money for these regulators right now?
Well, like the rest of the federal budget, up in the air. The Senate earlier this week rejected one of the plans from the House of Representatives that was talking about cutting $25 million from the Securities and Exchange Commission budget, perhaps cutting the Commodity Futures Trading Commission's budget by about a third. After the global financial system melted down, last year's Congress thought, all right, we need to watch over the financial system a little better.
Right.
That produced the big Dodd-Frank financial reform law. And among other things, it handed oversight of a $300 trillion derivatives market to the CFTC. And the CFTC says, we'd like some money to do this. The SEC says it needs to hire more people to do its thing. And at the moment, no new money.
But cutting back on money is not a done deal yet, right?
No. In fact, of course, the Senate and the House have to come together about all this. That will unfold hopefully over the next couple of weeks. But even so, besides the CFTC layoffs, the SEC chairman has for now stopped setting up five new bureaus that were supposed to do things like oversee credit ratings agencies, oversee financial whistleblowers, oversee the muni bond market. I mean, important stuff.
Yeah. And one of the other important parts of the financial reform law that was passed, David, is this Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Is there any funding problem on that front?
Well, when that thing was set up, Congress was onto this, was hip to this idea that the controversial agency could be reined in by the purse strings, by its budget. So the law says that it's the Federal Reserve that funds the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. But the funding plan that came out of the House has a little line in there that curbs the amount of money for this new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And I'm no lawyer, but some experts think that restriction is just illegal.
Marketplace's special correspondent, David Brancaccio. David's blog, Economy 4.0, is at marketplace.org. David, thanks.
My pleasure.
Well, the new Apple iPad 2 goes on sale today, Jeremy, and by all accounts, it's going to sell really well.
I bet.
Think we can pretty much bank on that, and Apple can too. But what about all the competitors in the market trying to sell similar tablets? Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports.
Apple sold 15 million iPads the first time around. Now everyone wants a piece of the tablet market. Industry analyst Tim Beharin says things are getting downright Darwinian.
The market can't support, 50, 60 tablets out there. It's going to be the survival of the fittest.
But is this all just a fad? Michael Gartenberg is a research director with Gartner.
We don't think iPads and media tablets in general are passing fads.
He says the tablet market will settle down after the shakeout. In the meantime, Forrester Research analyst Sarah Rotman-Epps says consumers will be able to get some good deals.
Consumers will have a lot of choice, and the prices of tablets will fall very quickly. This is the year that we think consumers will go look at lots of other tablets and then buy an iPad.
They'll get their first chance to check out the new, thinner, lighter, double-camera-toting model today. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
And we'd love to hear your thoughts about anything you hear on the Marketplace Midday Update. Just go to marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.